Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The T-Biz Podcast delivers T-News that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Hot tea is gaining momentum. The FDA bans red dye number 3 in foods and beverages. And Argentina's Misiones tea growing region is awarded GI status. Plus, lessons from Japan's deep engagement with tea. In medieval times, Japanese commanders bestowed teaware on valiant survivors at banquets, explains historian Morgan Patelka. Later in the early modern period, tea culture permeated every walk of life in the imperial capital of Kyoto. The prevalence of shinoyu in the Shogun era, a time of social upheaval and war, provides relevant insights into coping with stressful times today. Professor Patelka joins us to reveal tea's unique role in bringing communities together in times of war and peace. Morgan's talk is one of four thought-provoking presentations during the day-long Global Tea Institute's 10th anniversary colloquium at UC Davis on January 30th. Registration is free at globaltea.ucdavis.edu. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What happens when businesses along the tea supply chain get together and support women and children in tea communities? The Mother and Child-Friendly Seal for Responsible Business is creating long-term positive impacts, making your cup of Ceylon tea all the sweeter. Learn more at srilanka-motherandchildseal.org.
The celebration of Hot Tea Month has been steadily gaining steam, pun intended. Marketers have invested in building momentum in recent years, coincided with growing interest in wellness and healthy lifestyle habits. Many consumers, particularly in Western markets, are increasingly aware of these benefits and incorporating tea into their daily routine. In the past decade, Hot Tea Month has been used to highlight traditional black, green, and herbal teas, and newer and trendy varieties such as matcha, chai, and bubble tea. The month has become a time for people to explore new types of tea and experiment with different brewing methods and innovations to enhance tea's cultural and health aspects. Technomic reports that chai, at 4.1%, was the fastest growing tea category in menus in the U.S. in 2023. In Canada, during that same period, chai offerings grew by 25% over 2 years, with specialty tea menu items up by 19.8% and hot tea up by 18.3%. Technomic asked consumers why they ordered hot tea away from home. The most common response was, quote, to get a pick-me-up at 23%, followed by to wash down my food at 19%, and to relax or unwind with family and friends, 18%. The survey respondents cited, quote, quench my thirst as the fourth most common reason to order tea, while 18% say they order tea with snacks or to indulge in a dessert or treat. Transparency Market Research, TMR, projects the tea market will expand to $33.9 billion by 2032, growing at a combined average rate of 5.9%. Quote, rising disposable incomes and growing health awareness in countries like Brazil, South Africa, and the Middle East present opportunities for expansion, writes TMR. Researchers also cite growing demand for premium teas such as single-origin, organic, and artisanal blends. Customers are willing to pay a premium for high-quality, sustainable, ethically sourced teas. Technavio projects the U.S. market for organic tea to grow by 93.9 million through 2029. Drivers include organic matcha and premium organic black tea, which are projected to grow at 5.2% CAGR. Technavio writes that consumers increasingly seek teas rich in antioxidants like apicalotin gallate and catechins. Quote, organic matcha green tea is leading the trend. Activities reported this month include tea tastings and pairings. Many tea shops, cafes, and specialty stores organize tea tasting events where people can sample different tea varieties. Educational campaigns. Organizations like the Tea Association of the USA and the Tea and Herbal Association of Canada and other tea-related businesses may run campaigns to educate the public about the history of tea, its cultural significance, and the many benefits it offers. These campaigns can also include social media content, blog posts, and in-store workshops. Third, tea-themed recipes and blog posts. Many food bloggers and enthusiasts share creative tea-based beverage, snack, or dessert recipes. Fourth, community gatherings and tea parties. People come together to host parties informally at home or as part of larger organized events. And finally, promotions and discounts. Tea retailers often run special promotions or discounts during Hot Tea Month, offering limited-time deals to popular tea blends and teaware. Business Insight. Tea sales peak in winter. Hot Tea Month is always chilly above the 40th parallel. The blizzard howling outside my window today, known as the Alberta Clipper, is expected to deliver 10 inches of snow this weekend, driven by 70 to 90 kilometer per hour winds. Today, the thermometer plummeted by more than negative 20 degrees C, that's 18.5 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, and the wind chill approached 50 below zero, a point so cold that temperature readings in centigrade and Fahrenheit converge. Winnipeg is the geographic center of Canada. Residents here are accustomed to buffeting by the Arctic Express and fierce gales blown in from the Great Lakes and North Atlantic. The annual mean temperature in January is negative 16 degrees centigrade, about 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit. However, the lore surrounding the arrival of the fast-moving low-pressure system that powers the Alberta Clipper stands out. In 1941, an Alberta Clipper killed 76 people here in just 7 hours. Sweeping down from the Rockies at 100 kilometers per hour, the wind chill dropped to negative 45 degrees C during the March 15th storm. Cherry red erythrosine, known commercially as red dye number 3, is widely used to color beverages, snack foods, and candy, but is not commonly used to color tea. In 1990, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, banned red dye number 3 in cosmetics and personal care products. On January 15, 2025, the FDA extended the ban to include food products and ingested drugs. Concerns were first raised about the safety of red dye number 3 during the 1980s, when studies linked it to thyroid tumors in laboratory animals. No conclusive studies connected the dye to cancer in humans, but Australia, Japan, and the European Union instituted bans out of caution. Over the years, ongoing research identified additional potential risks, including its role in hormone disruption and cancers. The 2025 ban reflects growing caution over the potential long-term effects of synthetic additives on health, particularly for children who are most likely to consume products containing the dye. These products include maraschino cherries, Pez candy, Brock's candy corn, Jelly Belly candies, strawberry-flavored beverages, toaster pastries, ice pops, and frozen fruit bars, as well as red icing on some cookies and snack cakes. Manufacturers must remove the dye from their products by January 2027. In recent years, formulators have replaced synthetic colors and additives with natural alternatives such as beet juice, red cabbage pigment, or carmine, a coloring made from insects. Biz Insight. The National Confectioners Association expressed concerns about the cost of reformulations given that red dye number 3 has not been shown to cause cancer in humans. Jim Jones, the FDA Deputy Director for Human Foods, told NBC News that, quote, "The FDA cannot authorize a food additive or color additive if it has been found to cause cancer in humans or animals," end quote. Once announced, the confectioners released this statement, quote, "Food safety is the number one priority for U.S. confectionery companies, and we will continue to follow and comply with FDA's guidance and safety standards," end quote. TBiz correspondent Horacio Bustos reports that Argentine tea produced in Misiones and Northern Corrientes has been awarded a geographical indication from the European Union. Tea from these provinces is the southernmost tea produced on the planet. GI recognition of Argentine tea protects the authenticity of its origin and attests to its quality worldwide, enhancing its cultural value and opening up opportunities in international markets. Designations of origin and traditional production methods are part of a system that protects products tied to specific geographical areas. Introduced in 1992, the system began a broader effort to safeguard traditional foods and agricultural products from misuse and imitation. It was the work of a whole year led by the General Directorate of Yerba Mate and Tea of the Ministry of Agriculture and Production, with the support of the Undersecretariat of Agri-Food Markets and International Insertion of the Secretariat of Agriculture, Livestock, and Fisheries of the nation. The effort was coordinated with the Argentine Tea Association, INTA Cerro Azul, and INTI Misiones. The presentation and defense of the request for the GI of Argentine Tea before the National Advisory Commission on Geographical Indications and Denominations of Origin for Agriculture and Food Products was carried out virtually. It is important to highlight that the GI is an intellectual property right that operates under the jurisdiction of the National Secretariat of Agriculture and is regulated by law. Adriana Yanez, representing the Argentine Tea Association, detailed in her presentation the particularities of the tea from this region. These teas are notable for their high polyphenol content, which gives them antioxidant power. Their liquor is reddish or coppery in black teas and bright yellow or greenish in green teas, with good shine and transparency even in cold infusion. The teas are balanced and smooth in flavor with low to medium astringency and a certain sweetness, while floral and vegetal notes predominate in the aroma. These qualities are achieved thanks to the orthodox production processes using rollers and rotovanes, which has also contributed to its international recognition for its safety. Studies characterizing Argentine products are also included to support the presentation, with comparisons of the district of Misiones Terroir with other tea worldwide, and a compilation of publications and different essays. The first GI in the European Union was granted in 1992 to the French Roquefort cheese, a blue cheese made from sheep's milk and produced in the Roquefort-sur-Soulon region of southern France. Next, Arvinda Anantharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending January 17, 2025. Baat Bakriti has ended 2024 on a high note with annual sales reaching 60 million kilos, making them India's third largest tea manufacturer with a 9% market share. 2025 will continue to be bullish as the company has announced its expansion plans. And this includes a new manufacturing unit in Dakar, Gujarat, which will boost Baat Bakri's instant tea blending volumes fourfold to 20,000 packets per day. The facility is being set up with an investment of over $10 million and is expected to open later this year. It will accommodate greater storage as well. The company is a significant buyer of Indian tea and imports a small volume from Kenya and Sri Lanka. And they're focused on its domestic market and plan to deepen market penetration in the south and east. In its hometown, Ahmedabad, market share is at 80%. The aim seems to be to close the gap between the top two contenders, Hindustan Unilever, Data Consumer Products, and Baat Bakri. Currently, Baat Bakri also operates 55 tea lounges across the country with plans to open 8 to 10 new lounges annually. The Tea Research Association, Toklai, the world's oldest and largest tea research institute, has unveiled a new learning platform called LearnTea. Our reporter from Guwahati, Rupa Goswami, says this global learning platform distills over 100 years of tea cultivation expertise into accessible courses for enthusiasts and industry professionals worldwide. LearnTea offers deep insights into tea science, from thriving garden management to tackling climate changes. The online courses are designed for tea enthusiasts and for professionals engaged in tea plantations. They're taught by experienced resource persons. And currently there are 6 courses up, and the fee ranges from 500 to 800 rupees. LearnTea has been designed in-house by Rituraj Sharma, Communications Officer for TRA Toklai. TRA Secretary Joydeep Phukan is quoted as saying, "The idea of the online tea courses is to share Toklai's tea knowledge with both the Indian and global tea industries, while also generating revenue through the courses." He added that the response has been good so far. TRA serves the research and development needs of the Indian tea industry, promoting research aimed at enhancing productivity and quality. A pioneer in tea research and development, TRA also provides extension services to the industry. And the Toklai Experimental Station was established in 1911.
And now, a word from this week's sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
In medieval times, Japanese commanders bestowed teaware on valiant survivors at banquets, explains historian Morgan Patelka. Later in the early modern period, tea culture permeated every walk of life in the imperial capital of Kyoto. The prevalence of shinoyu in the Shogun era, a time of social upheaval and war, provides relevant insights into coping with stressful times today. Professor Patelka joins us to reveal tea's unique role in bringing communities together in times of war and peace. Morgan's talk is one of 4 thought-provoking presentations during the day-long Global Tea Institute's 10th anniversary colloquium at UC Davis on January 30th. Registration is free at globaltea.ucdavis.edu. Morgan Patelka is a historian of Asia and a researcher internationally known for his expertise in Japanese art and culture and his love of tea. After graduating from Oberlin College, Morgan earned a doctorate in East Asian Studies at Princeton University. He next taught for 8 years at Occidental College in Los Angeles. In 2013, he was named director of the Carolina Asia Center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He chaired the Department of Asian Studies at UNC from 2019 to 2024 and is now a distinguished professor of history and Asian studies. The son of a potter, he has a lifelong passion for all things tea. Morgan Patelka is the author of Spectacular Accumulation, a book on precious objects pursued by Japanese military leaders during the Shogun era. He has also written on interpreting medieval ruins and the value of material culture, tea culture, and Raku potters. Let's welcome this remarkable tea historian and lecturer from North Carolina.
I'm really happy to be here talking with you today, Dan. Thanks.
500 years ago, Kyoto was the imperial capital of Japan, a thriving center of cultural creativity despite 2 centuries of civil war that ultimately devastated the city. Will you discuss tea's vibrant role in this period of war?
In Japanese history, tea has been used in different ways at different historical moments. My specialty is the late medieval and early modern period, especially the 16th and 17th centuries. And that also happens to be the most intensely active era in the culture of tea, when the elites, the samurai leaders, the wealthy merchants, the heads of Buddhist temples pretty much universally were engaged in the active study of the tea ceremony and the use of tea culture as part of their political activities. So tea in that period was actually very closely intertwined with war. And so part of my research and part of my teaching is to understand that and to emphasize it, because I think if we erase the connection that tea had historically with power and with war, that's actually dangerous, right? To misunderstand the past is potentially to allow it to be repeated in ways that would be much more violent and destructive in the present. There's an idea in East Asian history and culture that there is the kind of sphere of military activity and there's the sphere of literature and culture, right? In Chinese, this is known as wenwu, and in Japanese, it's bunbu. And the idea that these are separate, I think, is one of the great sort of myths, in a way, of East Asian history, because in the lives of leaders, the two were intertwined. Mm-hmm. So a shogun or a samurai warlord would ride his horse, you know, leading his men into battle, and then in the aftermath, use a tea banquet, a tea gathering, as a way to kind of knit the warrior band back together. Some people had been lost. Many acts of violence had been committed. And I think tea was one of many ritual practices that the samurai used to kind of recreate the warrior organization when it was frayed by the act of war. There also is a lot of evidence that the samurai used the arts of tea as rewards. So, you know, if my general successfully topples that castle that I've sent him to defeat, I might reward him by gifting him the most famous tea bowl in my collection. You might think he would instead want a lot of land, a lot of prisoners, a lot of gold. But because these 16th and 17th century samurai cared so much about tea culture, the best rewards you could possibly receive in many cases was a tea utensil. And then that would become part of your treasured collection that defined you as a warrior, not only your acts on the battlefield, but your collection of Chinese and Japanese ceramics made you great. And so that's a history that I think is worth celebrating and understanding. It's a reminder that practices that in the modern era we associate with meditation, self-knowledge, health, healing, you know, have a complicated history that sometimes goes beyond just the spiritual dimension. And I'm really interested in delving into that. Later, when Japan in the late 19th and 20th centuries became a global power, had a militaristic empire, tea played a role in new notions of Japanese identity, new notions of Japanese culture that evolved in response to the circumstances of the world at that time. And then when Japan lost the war and was so, you know, soundly defeated and had to reinvent itself in the post-war era, he was kind of reconfigured once again to become associated with this idea of global peace. And it's a noble concept and an aspiration I am supportive of. But to me, we can't allow that post-war aspiration to erase the pre-war use of tea in very ideological ways and the close association of tea with war in the pre-modern era. So as a historian, as an educator, untangling that mess is sort of what I've committed my career to.
How has academic interest and appreciation of tea culture evolved?
I'm a specialist in Japan, and that gives me the opportunity to travel to Japan to do my research. And tea culture in Japan, both the tea ceremony, the kind of formal, you know, I think most well-known version of tea culture in Japan, is one part of the work that I do. But tea is also, of course, just an incredibly important beverage, and it's an industry in Japan. So those are both areas where collaboration is important. Because I'm a historian who's interested in art, I often meet with archaeologists. I go to museums that have big collections of tea utensils of the different art forms that are associated with the history of tea. And more recently, I've become interested in tea and the environment. So, you know, I'm interested in tea plantations, tea production, tea distribution in Japan. Japan is definitely one of many cultures in Asia that has such a deep engagement with tea in every aspect of life, whether it's the startling variety of tea beverages you can buy in a vending machine in any train station, to the temples and tea houses where you can have chanoyu, the kind of formal tea ceremony with green matcha, to really understand the history of that whole range of tea culture in Japan, you have to talk to a lot of people and you have to travel to a lot of places, because it's truly across the entire Japanese archipelago. In every city, the culture of tea is nuanced and local. And so part of the joy of studying the history of tea in Japan is trying to see that big picture through talking to folks all across the country. But then the global part is that, of course, tea is not limited to Japan, as the listeners of your podcast know so well. This is a global beverage, a global diverse culture. Understanding how tea bowls, for example, the ceramics made for drinking tea, came to Japan from China and Korea, but then evolved and changed in all kinds of interesting ways in Japan, and were distributed all over the world. Looking at the collections of Japanese ceramics in Europe and America and other places is equally important to seeing that big picture. So it really is a global process that involves a lot of exchange of ideas and a lot of collaborative research. So that's part of what makes taking part in this conference so exciting.
Will you share your thoughts on proposals to establish a global educational hub for tea?
It's a really intriguing proposition, and I've been so excited to see the work that Catherine and others have been doing. It is a great opportunity to see the cultural distinctions in how tea operates from one place to another, or from one moment to another. But then to also find the connecting through lines, because, of course, the tea plants have the same scientific properties. They have the same biochemical elements, and they interact with human bodies, of course, in these different cultures in similar ways. So the chance to understand how the cultural articulations of tea differ, but how the scientific environmental foundations are connected, I think is a wonderful chance. I mean, that's in my mind what global collaborative work is about. It's about seeing similarities and differences, right? We don't want to flatten the world. We don't want to say tea is the same everywhere. You know, we're all the same because we all drink tea. That that really risks erasing differences that matter. But on the other hand, we don't want to just say, well, Japanese tea culture and Chinese tea culture are so different. They have nothing in common. There's nothing to learn from one another. That's, I think, wrong and dangerous. They're fundamentally linked. And there's been so much mutual influence in both the past and the present. So there's something about a respectful and healthy engagement where we line up the things that help us to tell these cultures apart, but we scientifically understand what brings them together. In the humanities, there has recently been this environmental turn where those of us who study history and literature and art history more and more are interested in the natural world, the way that the environment shapes and contains artistic endeavors. And tea culture is such a natural topic for the environmental humanities, because you have paintings, you have ceramics, you have literature, you have poetry, but you also have the biochemistry of tea plants, the effects of tea on the human body, the positive and negative outcomes of growing tea and tea plantations, right? So it's that linkage, I think, that is really important and exciting when I think about the Global Tea Institute.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of Tea Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.